is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Ukraine crisis. George Friedman is the chairman of Geopolitical Futures, writing most recently about Ukraine crisis. We begin with some of the headlines out of London. Late day in Europe, early evening in parts of Eastern Europe, and midnight or after in Moscow. Kiev is reporting massive cyber attacks hitting banks and state websites. Kiev is reporting the possibility of calling up all reservists age 18 to 60. Kiev is reporting an MP saying we may impose martial war. At the same time, within these last hours, the U.S. and the EU have visited sanctions, as was predicted, on the Russian Federation for the episode, now invasion, of sovereign territory, Ukraine, in the breakaway oblasts of Luhansk and Donetsk. The same time, I learned from Geopolitical Futures, the Japanese have said that Tokyo will impose sanctions on Russia. That's fresh to me. We have much to say of the economies of Europe adjusting to the present diplomatic contest, but I begin with the question to George Friedman. George, right now, Vladimir Putin made a very unpredictable speech these last days about how Ukraine is not a sovereign state. Ukraine is guided by, and I believe he used the term neo-Nazi, Ukraine is conducting or about to conduct a genocide of the Russian speakers of Ukraine. You have written that at this point, Vladimir Putin is presenting a case that looks like war, but is not actually at this moment war. What is it, George? What is the proper way of understanding what's been constructed in Donbass? Good evening to you.
Well, it's intimidation. And Donbass and the other regions in this area already belong to Russia informally. They had wanted to secede from Ukraine. They were primarily Russians who lived there, and Russian troops were already present in this area in the form of special operations force and so on. So what he invaded was an area that he already controlled, that had really left the Ukraine, wanted to be part of Russia. They had never put it officially as part of Prussia, but it was. So in many ways, he has been making actions that appear to be very threatening and brave, but avoiding the really crucial issues. I mean, taking this region is a joke. It has to be, because they had it already. And so what he's doing is trying to show that he is prepared to go to the wall without getting any near the wall.
Remarks in these last days by leaders of NATO, by leaders of the EU, point to serious repercussions in the event of. I note that the foreign minister of Great Britain, Liz Truss, on radio in these last hours, said that the expectation is today Ukraine, and I believe the foreign minister, Liz Truss, pointed to the Baltic states. Do you see any evidence that Russia is preparing to attack NATO?
So far, Russia has done nothing to attack NATO. It has done nothing to really attack Ukraine. There's a problem with the Russian deployment. It's got three areas of tanks divided. Now, a tank, U.S. tank, gets about a half a mile to the gallon. So in other words, these tanks have to have huge amounts of fuel. Those fuels have to be put somewhere. They're usually visible, the tanks for them. And if the United States wanted to get in and knock out those tanks, which would not be really that difficult, basically, the tanks would be planters. The reason he's not used them is because an armored assault, 1943 style, which is what he's threatening, in a country as large as Ukraine, requires massive resources and a lot of time. They're there as a signal. They're not there to be used.
George, the puzzle then, as we look at the map and we see how far Donbass is from Kiev, the threat these last days, according to Kiev reporting, and it's fog of war, so I hesitate, is that Putin plans to attack Kiev. From your looking at the map, and I'm looking at that deployment of exercise troops in Belarus, is that credible that they have the equipment, the manpower, and the long tail, the support that that would need?
It's the long tail that's question. It's the long tail of the attack, not the tanks. What we've been doing is trying to show the Russians how remarkably harsh our attacks are going to be without ever mentioning the possibility of the use of force. What the Russians are trying to do is show that they're holding back from the inevitable conquest of Ukraine that has no problem, that they would easily do it. Well, in doing all these things, you wonder, well, it's been a month. Why don't you go do it already? And there's good reasons why they don't do it already. As to the sanctions, why don't we impose them already? Well, we're not sure that they're going to be all that telling. So each side is sitting there making faces at each other. There's something in New Zealand called a haka, where two sides stand together and make faces at each other. But neither side has made a decisive move. And this is the thing we all have to understand. For all the things it says could happen, very little has happened.
I see movement in the commodity prices worldwide, especially in the soft commodities. Wheat, for example, Russia and Ukraine together make up a sizable percentage of export wheat in the world. But there are other metals that come from Ukraine. Certainly energy is spiking and has for weeks because of the possibility here. Is that part of the Russian thinking, that those commodities prices are more threatening than tanks?
No, I don't think the Russians expected the response they got. I think they were very surprised when the United States looked at the situation and was so aggressive in their own words as to what happened. They've gotten bogged down into a diplomatic situation. And the one thing they did not expect was Germany. They thought the EU would split, NATO would split, and that Germany, desperate for natural gas out of Russia, would split it as well. It didn't happen. And by NATO not splitting, something that was key to their strategy didn't take place.
In 2014, when the crisis began with the fleeing of the then president, in 2014, Crimea was annexed almost momentarily with the little green man. Donbass and the Donbass, Luhansk and Donetsk, the two oblasts, then went into turmoil with many statements of independence and freedom, a lot of gathering in town squares, and there was shelling and fire and fighting that extended into 2015. Then there was Minsk II and what appeared to be a ceasefire, except for a nuisance fire along the frontier. That was 2014-2015. Is there any difference today, George? Has the map changed in some fashion these last days?
Luhansk and these areas seceded from Ukraine because they were primarily Russians and they wanted to be part of Russia. The Minsk Treaty kind of made it oddly possible to get a very complicated situation, but it left it there under the control of Russia. What's changed today is that the Russians decided to roll into this region that it already had and, you know, make war without actually making war.
So what we have then is a pantomime of warfare. The Russians not opening fire on anyone. Ukrainians claiming or asserting that Russia is coming, Russia is coming. Is this then the predicate of a new Cold War in which nothing much happens, but there's a lot of plotting?
We've been in a Cold War with the Russians for a while. This is part of a general attempt by the Russians to reestablish their historic borders going back into the 18th century. We saw that happen in South Caucasus. We saw that happen in Belarus. We saw it happen in Kazakhstan a while ago. But the big piece that had to be assembled to make it true is Ukraine. And what the Russians wanted, had to have from their point of view, was the strategic depth of the Ukraine. Because the problem is this. There were four invasions of Russia. A Swedish one, believe it or not, Napoleon, and two by the Germans. Each of them were defeated because of the distance they had to go. By the time they got there, it was winter. The Russians gave all of this up in 1991. And what they want is to recover what they had for so many centuries. This is Putin's goal, to recover these borderlands and, if possible, to split NATO.
The remarks Mr. Putin presented the other night before the decision to move military personnel into the oblast, the rebellious oblast. They're characterized variously as unhinged or alarming or angry. Do you account for that? Was that a stage-managed presentation, or has Putin broken free of being edited?
Putin wants to appear unpredictable and aggressive. He wants to intimidate. The Ukrainians want to act as if they're about to be attacked to get Western help. Everybody is posturing in different ways. Problem is, this is not how wars begin. The essence of war is surprise. The Russians have completely given away any chance of surprise here. And now they're all kind of making faces at each other. I don't think Putin has lost it. However, I think he may be in trouble. A general, former general, called for Putin's resignation in Russia. That's unheard of. Some others have spoken about it. The problem is that he thought he was going to be able to intimidate the United States in particular, but also the Europeans. It didn't happen. The situation that he wanted to create, a split in the region, simply did not occur. And now he is trying to figure out what he's going to do. So the next move is up to Putin. Okay, you've taken what you can take. Move, don't move. And the longer he doesn't move, the less credibility he has at home, too. So that's his problem.
You mentioned the Swedish invasion of Russia. That was the Battle of Poltava. I believe that's important to Mr. Putin. He sees himself as an update version of Peter, protecting the empire from invasion from the West. I'd like to turn to the West when we come back, George, because there are other major players here looking for either aggrandizement or a better economy. I'm looking at Berlin, Paris, London, and Rome when we come back. George Friedman is the chairman of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site highly recommended following Ukraine crisis. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.